history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you reside in this amazing, wonderful, great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there really are heroes around you, and they come in all shapes and sizes, all ethnicities and backgrounds. And the heroes that we hear from each week here all share one thing in common. They all love our country and their fellow Americans enough to have put their lives on the line. We're here to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that has been paid for our freedom. And in that process, boy, do we learn a lot. We often hear stories that have never been told anywhere else. So we're educated, but also entertained. And so frequently, and I think for me personally, every single time, we are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Today, I have the privilege of introducing you to a 97-year-old who still plays the piano and the trumpet and just passed a driving test that'll have him licensed in California till he's 99. He's lived in the U.S. for 40 years and spent the last quarter century in Bakersfield, California. But he first put on a U.S. Army uniform in 1938 at the age of 17. This man has quite a legacy. Eventually, you'll get to hear him share about his 8 children and their families, but none of those kids would have ever been born if he hadn't escaped the Bataan Death March 75 years ago. And the timing of this episode couldn't have worked out any better. This coming Wednesday, October 25th in Washington, D.C., leaders of the House and Senate will preside over a ceremony that a special group of veterans and their families have been waiting for decades, and one they've been looking forward to ever since the bill was first put forth in 2015, finally passed in December of 2016, and now, this coming week, will finally come into fruition. That bill awards the Congressional Gold Medal, the highest civilian award Congress can give, in honor of 260,000 Filipinos who fought for the U.S. during World War II. It's estimated that only a little more than 15,000 remain alive today, and Cipriano Ginto is one of them. Before we get into the interview with Mr. Ginto, I should note that when it comes to these Congressional Gold Medals that have been awarded in recent years to groups like the Tuskegee Airmen, Japanese American veterans, the WASPs, Women Air Force Service Pilots, and others, and that will soon honor those who served secretly in the OSS, precursor to the CIA, when it comes to the Congressional Gold Medal, often it's up to a surviving veteran or his family to come forward to claim that medal. There is a National Veterans Registry for Filipino vets, but it is by no means complete. So as I referenced the gold medal up front here, it hit me that I should put out that call. If you're a Filipino veteran of World War II, or you know one, or even if you know a family of a Filipino World War II vet who's no longer with us, you can follow up to make sure a medal is issued in honor of his service. If you go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, I have a link there to the Filipino Veterans Recognition and Education Project, which can walk you through the necessary steps. I might mention this again later, but I don't want to wait any longer for you to hear the distinct voice of Dr. Cipriano Ginto. The doctor is for dentistry, which he practiced in the Philippines. After coming to the U.S. in 1976, he became an operating room technician. But his first medical experience came in World War II, and it came out of necessity. You'll hear him share how, after so many of the initial medics were killed and wounded, he was pulled into that duty, carrying the wounded on litters to makeshift aid stations. By the time this hour is up, I trust you'll grow accustomed to his accent, that you'll feel his resilient spirit, and there's no doubt in my mind you will not miss his undying love for the USA. But let's go back to the beginning, Dr. Ginto. What was it that made you enlist in the U.S. Army as a 17-year-old in the Philippines in 1938?
I still remember it was Washington Day, February 22.
And why did you do that?
I don't know. It's just a coincidence. I went to the military to enlist. So they sent me to the hospital for medical checkup, everything, and then I was sworn in by the adjutant at the regimental headquarters. I took my oath of office. a private enlisted man. And then started our training in the infantry. I was assigned in Company A, 57th Infantry Philippine Scout U.S. Army. That was in Port William McKinley, Philippines.
What was life like before war, before World War II?
Before World War, yeah. That was 1938, 39, 40, and the war broke out in 1941. I've already 3 years service in the military before the war broke out. And then that was December 8, 1941. I was an active military in the infantry division, the 57th Infantry. The 57th Infantry, they are the one of the foremost infantry, brave infantry to fight in the firing line against the invasion of the Japanese. The Japanese invaded the Philippines, both east and west. We encountered the east invasion. That's Mauban, Quezon, the province of Philippines in Quezon along the coast. We beat them. We encountered them just to delay their advancement to the Philippines, to the mainland, to give time for other forces to go to Bataan, where we are all assembled in Bataan fighting the Japanese military. We are under General Douglas MacArthur, and the Assistant General Wainwright. They are my favorite general. They are nice. General MacArthur took his wife in the battlefield. Then Mrs. MacArthur is with us in the battlefield. The only general who is taking wife to the battlefield.
Because all we ever hear, especially when Bataan comes up.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah? Well, everyone talks about MacArthur leaving and leaving you guys behind. But you're saying when he was there, he actually had his wife with him on the battlefield?
Yeah, the wife is there with us in the battlefield. My goodness, I can't believe that. The only general in the United States is taking his wife in the battlefield.
What did that mean to you?
That's very nice, yeah. Very brave. They are really patriotic, you know. Couple. The most patriotic couple in the world.
A patriotic couple, General Douglas MacArthur and his wife Jean, who refused to leave her husband's side when the Japanese attacked the Philippines. She stayed there with him until that point in March 1942, when the writing was really on the wall. And rather than have his general captured by those Japanese forces that would eventually carry out the Bataan Death March, President Franklin D. Roosevelt ordered MacArthur to leave Corregidor in a risky PT boat escape. Up until that point, MacArthur had insisted he would stay with his men and that his family, Jean and their 4-year-old son Arthur, would stay with him. At the president's order, the MacArthurs were evacuated, and before he left, the general told General George Moore, who was staying behind, quote, "Keep the flag flying. I'm coming back." He would come back. And in a bit, we'll hear in MacArthur's own voice what he said when he did come back. But I want to hear more of Cipriano Ginto's voice. You talked about the MacArthur's patriotism. But what about your patriotism? You grew up in a country that had been under U.S. control since 1898 and the Spanish-American War. But what was it that made you so determined to serve?
I think it is in my blood. I followed the footsteps of my father. My father has been in the U.S. Army before. I just follow his footsteps. It is a privilege to serve and defend my country. That is the reason why I enlisted the military, to defend the freedom of my country. It's a privilege. It's an opportunity to serve. I am proud of that. I thank God about that, for giving me the opportunity, the privilege to defend the freedom of my people. That is my intention in serving my country.
I've heard stories from guys who were there in the Philippines at this time. They talk about the weapons and the equipment that you had, that it might not have been that advanced, that it was left over from World War I, and some of it didn't even work. And then I hear about food and you guys not getting supplies in that way. What did you experience? Did you have everything you needed when you were fighting the Japanese?
I handled the Springfield rifle the 45 caliber pistol. I handle the 30 caliber. Those are the weapons that I handle during the battlefield. But then later on, during that war in Bataan, I was assigned in the first aid medical station. I was assigned to be a litter bearer to get all our, to collect all our casualties in the firing line. We use the litter to collect all those injured, all those casualties. It's really hard. Most of our caregivers there, first shot, you know, were killed. And I'm thankful that I survived and to collect the casualties of our troops. Yeah, so we have our doctors. We are nurses behind the battlefield where we collect all the casualties. And they were given a first aid treatment there. So I'm proud to save their lives.
Yeah, you did save lives. And your life was spared. And you have 8 children that are thankful for that. And they've had impacts in the medical profession. But so you're there. You mentioned being on the east side of Luzon when the Japanese attacked. But just as your forces there were being pushed back, American forces all over the island were being pushed back. There are no reinforcements, no air support, no supplies, and it turned into a really desperate situation.
During the war, we were pushed to the Bataan Peninsula. All military, U.S. Army, everything, they are all in Bataan. Until the time we, from January to April, fierce fighting. So we have a lot of casualties, and the Japanese have a lot of casualties too. But unfortunately, we were, you know, under. We have no more airplanes. We have no more bombs. Japanese have that. So we were forced to surrender April 1942. And then all the soldiers were taken prisoners. That is the time when they started the death march from Bataan to Camp O'Donnell. It's about 30 miles walk. That is the death march. Thousands and thousands of Filipinos and Americans walked through that death march. But in my case, we, our commander, Captain Jackson, told us, you are here from the Philippines. If you can, if you have time to escape, to escape from the death march, you can do it. So I formed my group. I was in charge of that group, and then I told them, let us go and escape, live or die among our members of my group. I formed that group to escape the death march. So we escaped the mountains for weeks. We escaped the death march. Thank God that we were able to survive that escape in the mountains until we reached the down the ocean, until we hired those people across Manila Bay. And then we went home peacefully in our home provinces, in our respective places.
I've got a few questions about that. One, even before the death march, I know this is a long time ago, but I want to understand how it happened and what it was like. So you sign up for the Philippine Scouts in 1938. You're serving for 3.5 years before the Japanese attacked the Philippines. Did you know they were going to attack? Did you expect them to attack?
No, we don't expect that. We don't expect the Japanese to come. We fought very hard. But then, before the surrender, I remember General MacArthur left us. We left for Australia. So General Van Rye took over his command. There was an announcement that General MacArthur will go out and General Van Rye will take over until the time of surrender. When we surrender, MacArthur is already in Australia together with our president, president of the Philippines, President Quezon, Manuel Quezon, was with him. I don't know why he went to Australia. Until the time when he comes to liberate, when in the time came to liberate us in 1945, he organized military, all military forces in Australia. That's what we knew. That's what he told us. So we are fortunate that You came again. In 1945, we were liberated. So we were under Japanese government for 3 years.
Did that bother you that MacArthur left and left you guys there?
I don't know. Why he said, we are worried why he left us. But then he left us for good until the time he liberated us.
Yes, I shall return were General MacArthur's famous words. Return he did in October 1944 with the cameras catching him wading ashore in Leyte. In fact, it was 73 years ago this week, October 20th, 1944, when that famous scene unfolded. And if you go to that very spot today, you'll find seven statues, double life-sized, in a pool of water with markers in English and Filipino. MacArthur is the focal point, of course, but the previously exiled president of the Philippines is also depicted at that MacArthur Leyte Landing National Park, as are three other generals, a sergeant, and CBS radio correspondent William Dunn. A nearby museum holds the text of the speech MacArthur delivered there, a speech that he read into a portable radio set to be transmitted across the Philippines, where the fighting would continue on for months. And here is what millions of Filipinos, including Cipriano Gento, our guest today, heard from the general 73 years ago.
This is the voice of freedom, General MacArthur speaking. People of the Philippines, I have returned. By the grace of Almighty God, our forces stand again on Philippine soil, soil consecrated in the blood of our two people. We have come dedicated and committed to the task of destroying every vestige of enemy control over your daily lives and of restoring upon a foundation of indestructible strength the liberties of your people. At my side is your president, Sergio Osmeña, worthy successor of that great patriot, Manuel Quezon, with members of his cabinet. The seat of your government is now therefore firmly reestablished on Philippine soil. The hour of your redemption is here. Your patriots have demonstrated an unswerving and resolute devotion to the principles of freedom that challenges the best that is written on the pages of human history. I now call upon your supreme effort that the enemy may know from the temper of an aroused and outraged people within that he has a force there to contend with no less violent than is the force committed from without. Rally to me. Let the indomitable spirit of Bataan and Corregidor lead on. As the lines of battle roll forward to bring you within the zone of operations, rise and strike. Strike at every favorable opportunity. For your homes and hearths, strike. For future generations of your sons and daughters, strike. In the name of your sacred dead, strike. Let no heart be faint. Let every arm be steeled. The guidance of divine God points the way. Follow in his name to the holy grail of righteous victory.
General Douglas MacArthur, October 20th, 1944. We're going to catch a break, but there's much more to come with 97-year-old Cipriano Ginto of Bakersfield, California. How exactly did he make that daring escape? What was he up to between that moment and the liberation of the Philippines? And yes, even at age 97, he still plays the trumpet like he once did for the 57th Infantry Regiment Band, and he also plays the piano. We're going to hear one of those instruments before we're done, and you can check out the video and, of course, some photos at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. We'll be right back after this.